This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, his name is Jason. My name is Dan, and this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast. If this is the first episode that you've ever listened to, you're in luck, because this 4th of July week, first week in July, is kind of the starting point for a lot of people when it comes to preparing for the upcoming season. And we're going to talk a lot about that today, about there's been, how many episodes has it been? I know I did like a summer checklist last week when you were gone. I think we talked about it 2 weeks ago as well. But we talk about that a lot this time of year because of how important it is to be prepared for the upcoming season. And we're going to talk about that here, but you went on vacation this last week.
Yes, I did.
Where'd you go?
We went to Fort Myers Beach, Florida. And we had a really good time. And okay. So a couple things with this. Do you use Uber at all?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on that?
I have not really had a bad experience. Usually, like, I'm a 6 foot, 200 plus pound white dude.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like I'm going to have any problems.
No, right? No.
Now, if my wife was using it by herself, not a big problem, I guess, except I've seen the videos or the news reports of like a woman gets in the wrong car and is never seen again type shit.
Right.
Yeah. What's your experience?
Well, so I'd never had an experience with it until this, and she's used it before and everything. So that's what we used for our main transportation while we were down there. And I didn't think anything really of it other than the fact that, you know, we're raised in a time of don't get in a stranger's car, you know, and then here we are and we get into strangers' cars and I don't know. And then the fact that, you know, there's just so many foreigners that are doing that, and you know, we're in the middle of bombing and stuff like that, and all I can think of is I hope this car's not got them, you know. So
but okay, welcome to the How to Hunt Deer podcast.
Yes. So that's my thoughts on that. But as far as convenience and everything, no, I thought it was a good thing. And most of them were, I mean, honestly, pretty friendly. There was a few that were, I don't want to say sketchy, but just a little bit. Like they didn't say anything, and no, it's fine. We most did a of lot the, of
most of the guys that. So when I went down to Florida, we used them for everything.
Yep.
Most of the dudes that picked me up were like from Puerto Rico or Cuba. They moved here from Cuba or things like that. Yep. And you get into conversations. Like, that's my favorite thing about using Ubers. You get to have just enough of a conversation with someone to find something interesting about them. Like, hey, the only reason I'm doing this, like, I got a full-time gig. You know, the only reason that I'm doing this is because I am, you know, trying to put my kids through college, or, you know, I lived in a third world country and I can come here and drive a car for a living.
Right.
That's good. I've talked with guys, you know, I had a really good conversation waiting in traffic with a guy from Nashville. He was like, dude, my goal is to be a songwriter and guitar player. Like, he didn't want to be the country star. He wanted to be like, I want to write the songs and I want to play guitar, and that's all I want to do. And, you know, he was 23 or something like that, and he moved to Nashville to do it. And so he's like, I live in a house with four other people, and I'm here's my dream, you know? So they're doing anything they can to make it.
Yeah, some of the stories were good. And like I say, some of them were really knowledgeable about the area and stuff. Yeah. So that was kind of cool too. But, you know, we went parasailing. We did dolphin tour. Last day I was in the water, I was getting ready to walk out, and I was in about 18 inches of water, and I saw this like cloud coming like real fast towards me. And it was like five stingray. And I don't know if really? I've ever been that close to them, but I mean, they probably crossed in front of me at like 6 inches. So I kind of freaked, you know. I didn't yell or scream or anything, but I kind of just like smacked the water real hard, and they just kept going. They just kept on their way. But I'm like, that was weird. That was cool to see them, but very weird. So
did you see any dolphins on your dolphin tour?
Oh, we saw a ton. I mean, they got them almost like they're trained like pets. You know, they take them out there and then they do hot laps with the boat, and then they get them to follow the boat. And so it was pretty cool. We kayaked for, gosh, the one day I think we did like 3 hours or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we did a lot of stuff.
Was the water hot down there?
It was definitely warm. I mean, it was like a warm bath water, is that what I would describe it. So,
yeah.
And then it rained, you know, rained for 20 minutes or an hour about every afternoon. So,
yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And now you're back in the humid Midwest, right? It's hot up here too, but it's sticky as shit.
Yes.
My God, you walk outside and you're just dripping.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I'm complaining, because it's like this every summer.
Oh yeah. Well, and that's the thing. We went down there, it was hot down there, but it wasn't like sticky like this. You know, to me, it's a different heat. You know, they say it's so humid down there. They talk about the heat down there, and I'm like, I don't know. I think it's worse up here, but.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What else did you do while you're down there? Anything fun?
Oh, we did that. Oh, and then we ate so much food. You know, we had to try everything. She'd never tried lobster. So we had lobster. We had, we had mahi-mahi tacos, and we had gator bites, and, you know, I've had a lot of the stuff before, but, and then, of course, you know, when we got ice cream every night, had to get ice cream and go for a walk on the beach and stuff, so it was a good time.
Yep. That's awesome, man. Awesome. Yeah. So now it's business,
yeah,
right? Like, I'm to a point now where I don't have any trail cameras out. I feel like I'm going to make it a priority to go to at least one of my farms this week and get at least a mineral site freshened up and get a camera out there. I think that's the goal. And then outside of that, my one farm closer to where I live is one of those farms where it's pretty much set up because I've been hunting it for like 18 years, almost 20 years now. And so I got tree stands in there, you know, they're in the rut funnels and places like that. So that's good. But outside of that, man, I think, I just have to make it to the one farm. I want to put at least one new tree stand up in this pinch, that I kind of located during shed season. And then it really becomes about, you know, the check boxes, which we talked about, like mock scrapes, getting some mock scrapes up, getting cameras up in some of these pinch points and on mineral sites to take inventory of the deer. But really what I have to do is wait for baseball to be over. And once baseball's over, then, and which is in like 2.5 weeks, then it's like full throttle.
Yeah.
For me, as far as getting ready.
So I actually was able to on Saturday, I had 4 cell cameras. I just needed to put new batteries in, format the cards and stuff. And I went to 4 different properties, made it happen. I took the weed eater and I went in, you know, some of this corn, damn, man, I was surprised. Some of this corn was like 7 foot tall. I couldn't believe it.
Dude.
I mean, just crazy.
Do you remember when you were a kid, knee high by the 4th of July,
yep.
Right? Dude, it has since the 80s.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know if it is the new seed, it's the genetics, the kind of corn they're growing, but it's like 6 foot by the 4th of July now.
Yep. Yep. Plus,
we're getting a lot of rain. So
yeah,
it's,
and the heat. Yeah,
the heat, yeah. Yep.
I don't know. So anyways, I had taken, I set one up at our farm that we own, and basically that's off of 2 merging trails off of our like micro food plot and then the neighbor's big cornfield. And then at home, I did one off of a creek bank and what will be a micro fall food plot. And then I went to 2 other properties, which are about 35, 45 minutes away, and took care of those on Saturday night. And so I had to take one of the cell cameras down from that property to take to another one. And that's when I got into the 7 foot tall corn and stuff. And so I took my rope kits and I made a couple mock scrapes and put some preorbital gland on there. And then I went to the bigger farm and I was in what normally is like a hub scrape area. And it's just where a bunch of trails come together. And then I happen to look and I see multiple beds. And this is the first time I've probably gone in this spot during this time of year, because generally I'll stay out until fall. But so that camera's been going off like crazy, lots of does. So this scrape that they are hitting is predominant downwind of the doe bedding area. So it was kind of cool to just see this all unfold. So I got mine done, my cell cameras, 4 of them anyways, done before the 4th. I've got a bunch of other cameras I'll try to put out, but if I don't get them out right now, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, dude. I'm starting to get antsy. You know, I haven't seen my social media feed hasn't been showing a lot of bucks in velvet type yet. I did go on a drive with my son. We noticed 3 things on this drive. One, we did see a big buck. My son's like, Dad, is that a buck back there? I stopped the truck. I'm looking way back there. I forgot my binoculars, but you could see antlers out past his ears. Okay. So the spread was there. He looked like he was going to be a good one. And then the discrepancy of fawn sizes was really interesting to see, because I saw a fawn that, you know, I'm not an expert at how big a fawn should be at a certain time or how, but we had one fawn that was very tiny. And this was, you know, this was yesterday, really tiny. And then we had another fawn that looks like what a fawn should look like in October. Right.
Okay,
so like,
yeah.
you can still see the spots, but it's, you know, the same size as a yearling, whatever. And so within 2 miles, we saw two fawns that were completely different sizes. So that tells you right there a little bit about the breeding seasons,
right,
and how wide it actually is depending on, you know, when does get bred. So that was, I think about that stuff now. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So we went for a drive last night as well, and we were able to see a bunch of does and fawns, and we didn't see any bucks within that drive. But so I think it was last week, I was reading an article. I think it was the National Deer Association put out. They had done a study that 8% of does will have triplets. So how often are you seeing triplets?
Very rare. I don't see triplets.
Yeah.
I don't see triplets. I see twins a ton.
Yeah.
A ton.
What do you think the percentage of, what do you think the percentage of that is?
I'll be honest. I think it's 50-50.
Uh-huh.
I mean, 50-50 with, I think I've only seen a set of triplets one time on trail camera. But that was in a year that was kind of like this, where we had a ton of rain. We had a mild winter leading up to it. You know what I mean? And so everything was there. Most of the time, I mean, I see a ton of twins, and then the other 50% is, I think it's 50-50, twins and singlets.
Singles. Okay.
So.
Now I was thinking of something when you were talking about the fawns that you'd seen. How much weight do you put into that now, as far as like your, you know, knowing your herd on these properties? If you see a fawn that looks like she's full grown right now versus a fawn that looks tiny, what your window is obviously off, or there's an imbalance of does, right or wrong?
Well, it would just mean, see, I don't know if I would go too terribly deep into that. I would say she just didn't get bred, or that, I mean, you know, just as well as I do, the does, I mean, all deer kind of shift their home ranges based off of food, cover, water. And so maybe where they're living now, there's a lot of cover. There was a lot of food in this area right now, but in the fall, it all gets chopped down, right? All the beans come out, all the corn comes out, all of these areas where there was a ton of cover now become wide open. And so maybe they shift their home range throughout the year. So I'm not going to sit here and say I know all those details about, you know, about that. I will say that it just tells me that the breeding window, you can run from, you know, according to the studies that I've seen, anywhere from late September to January.
Yeah.
So September, October, November, December, and January, maybe even late further. So that's like a 5-month window potentially.
Right.
Especially if there's a second or third estrus cycle for a doe.
Yeah. So talking about these deer that shift around and whatever, when I was putting up my trail cameras, I thought I was losing my mind because I got to this one piece and like, it's corn again. Like, it was corn last year. And then I look back at my pictures and I'm like, no, it was beans last year, but the neighbor's property planted corn on corn. So they were corn last year and they planted corn again this year. And I just wonder how many times, like, have you seen that to where the crop rotation is off in your area, or they surprise you with, you know, like, you think it's a bean year and then it ends up being a corn year, or the neighbors do it. And how much does that affect your game plan going in?
You know, the farm that I've hunted the most is pretty good at rotating. I can't remember any year, and maybe it's because I wasn't paying attention, but I'll say I can't remember a year where they went back to back on any crops. Even when corn prices were really good, I was at like 5 years ago or something like that. I can't remember. But I can't remember a time where they were going back to back on crops. I will say this, that I think when it is a bean year on my farms, the velvet pictures I get are extremely, extremely awesome.
Uh-huh.
Right. It's one of those years where, man, like the deer don't seem to shift as much when there's beans on the, on the landscape. Now, I will say this, that's up top. When we get down into the river bottoms and it's a corn year, the corn year means that the hunting season actually in the river bottom is going to hold more bucks than more bucks and more deer, because all the deer are coming to the corn. And as you know, when a combine comes through on a bean, that there's no cover, there's not even, it's just all flat ground.
Right.
The beans are all out. It's all just flat to the ground. And there might be some spillage or some waste, but outside of that, the equipment that these farmers are using these days is so efficient. Yeah. It just sucks everything up. And there's no, except for corn. For some reason, corn just is more of a violent getting it out of the ground and throwing the seeds and stuff. But I think that I'm, and I'll say this, I feel like I'm talking a lot, but I'm fired up.
I
can tell you the year. I think it was like 2010 or 8 or something like this. The farmer got a new combine, and drastically, and I mean drastically, the deer went off this property because it was so good, especially from November to the late season. It was so good at picking up corn that there was hardly any waste anymore in the cornfields. And I gave him shit about it. I'm like, dude, why'd you have to go get a new combine? He's like, I got to get my yield up. And I'm like, Jesus, man, what about the deer? They need something to eat.
It's funny you say that, because I remember years ago, we would always talk about that. There was these certain farmers, they had, I don't want to say junk equipment, but it was not as efficient, you know, and you could pretty much plan on those fields would have deer in them year round. I mean, there was just so much spillage. They'd turn the corner and roll off the hopper, or it'd come out the back end or something, or just wouldn't, you know, cut it. But yeah, now it's become one of those things where the equipment's amazing that they make, and they're able to go in and knock it out, and it's gone. I like these corn years on this one particular property I got just for access purposes. But with the neighbor putting in corn, it kind of changes stuff, because what I've noticed is this corn allows me to get in on mine. But if mine gets picked and his is still standing, now the deer are just staying in that corn, and then mine hunts that much harder. But it was just something I noticed this weekend, and I haven't had that for several years where it's been both of those fields are corn. Generally, the neighbor's on the opposite year, but...
Right. Yeah, man. Crop rotation, if it is something you should pay attention to, especially in ag country. And I don't just mean corn, beans. I mean, even like cattle rotations in certain pastures and things like that. There are a couple places out west where I feel like they rotate certain specific years, or maybe they'll put them in a specific, a pen, they call them pens or whatever, but you know, the pen is, you know, 1,000 acres or whatever it is. And the deer will do different things wherever the cattle are go. And then there's an adjacent pasture that has no cattle in it that year. So that's where you're going to find the deer. So if you can be keen on what the crop rotations are doing, what the livestock is doing, maybe the farmer gets out and he cuts some trees down, or he works on harvesting a timber harvest or something like that. I'm going to tell you, man, like all these things matter, and the more you know about all of these things, the better chances you're going to have of kind of knowing where the deer or the bucks live in this area.
Right. I will say on another note too, I did actually get my bow out, so I haven't shot it yet, but I needed to put a new D-loop on and stuff, and I just kind of gave it a once over, and I waxed a string and stuff, and then I was going through arrows and kind of prepping and contemplating on, do I shoot my old day six arrows, or do I use the Victory arrows that I've got set up, because this elk trip is 2 months away. And I got to get moving with my bow. So,
right. I completely forgot, dude. Like, I'm doing okay at like doing my workouts. You know, like I'm doing okay. However, I need to do more. especially for my mule deer trip in early October, man, I gotta start doing some more weighted hikes or getting on my feet more throughout the day. I'm sitting in front of a damn computer all day. And so I definitely need to start getting my heart rate up more, because as you know, I'm getting old, dog. Mm-hmm. And so
I can't just
skip through the woods anymore.
Right.
I have to take my time so I don't fall over.
Right.
When I walk. But my bow, dude, I got to get my bow out. I'm getting it out today.
Yeah. So, and now I did hear, I think the other day, you are not getting a new bow. You are keeping your old one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to just stick with what I had. I was so hyped about getting a new one, but just like the procrastination that I've put on myself this year, now I'm to the point where it's like, I don't want to set a new bow up. I just want to pull the old one out and start shooting it. And dude, it's killed a ton of deer for me. So why do I need one? I don't necessarily need one, even though I want one.
Yeah, sometimes all the hype and everything, when something new comes out, it's, I don't know. Right. That's like, I went downstairs, like I said, I cleaned mine up, I put a new D-loop on, and it's ready to go. I just need to start shooting. So, So anxious to do that. And then I got to start going through some of my camo and make a list of what I need and don't need yet. I should be in pretty good shape. So,
well, here's the deal. I have two piles of shit in my garage. One is a pile of hunting gear that I use and has been used, and I always use it. And then a pile of hunting gear that I either need to get rid of or like organize, because right outside of this door behind me, I have a little room and it's full of hunting stuff, and it probably hasn't been touched in a couple years. And so that just tells me I have too much stuff and I need to just go to like Facebook Marketplace and start to sell some of this stuff, because I don't like, I have a pile of camouflage clothes that I don't even wear. I have so much gear.
Yeah. It's funny you said that. I couldn't sleep last night. And one of the things I was thinking of is making a list of stuff I could sell, because it's just ridiculous. Right. The amount of stuff at almost 45 years old that you just accumulate over time. And then you find another box or another tote, or you find another cubby hole for it. And that's where it goes. And it just sits there. So,
yeah. Yeah. I did, when you said preorbital and mock scrape, I did miss an opportunity to talk about our new partner on the podcast here. And that is the new partner for the podcast is Code Blue Sense. Now, if you guys are unfamiliar with Code Blue Sense, they make a variety of real and synthetic deer urines. They make scent elimination products. They make the mock scrapes kits that we talk about and that we use a lot. And it's just a really good company that offers everything that you need. Like, I am a huge fan of like making sure my clothes are clean. And so I'll use the Code Blue detergents and things like that to get my clothes clean. And then I use Ozonix or like a ozone type product to kind of clean it, keep them clean throughout the week, maybe wash them once every 2 weeks, depending on how dirty or blood soaked or mud soaked that they get. But go to codebluesense.com, enter the discount code. What's the discount code? NFC20 for 20% off. NFC20 for 20% off. And good product line right there, my friend.
Yeah. Yep. No, I've been using that stuff, so it works.
Yeah. All right. So here's the deal. This was kind of a hard pivot, but we recently, and there's been so much energy by people getting put into this public land things. Oh. And I feel like we have to talk about it, because I don't know if we've necessarily went into depth about it. Because honestly, some of the places that we've hunted before were on the chopping block as far as trying to get sold. And so it didn't go through, right? And I'm just sitting over here going, thank God, because then I'd have to go through a whole nother routine of finding. And I don't think South Dakota near as much, but I know places in Idaho, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah were on the block. So,
well, the thing of it is, once they start, they just don't stop.
They do not stop.
You know, so, I mean, everybody needs to be aware of this. The next time that there's another bill that's brought up, you know darn well that this is going to be an introduction or a reintroduction, or they're going to try to come at it from a different angle. And, you know, the fact that they tried to, like, basically backdoor this back into this bill after the fact that they said they were done with it, you know, it's sad because, you know, there's so much to enjoy on these public lands, and it's not just our hunting, right? It's backpackers, it's hikers, it's campers, it's all the horseback riders. I mean, you think of all this public land and they want to sell it off for what? For another strip mall or whatever that could get developed, and then it sits empty in 10 years because they go bankrupt. That's
right. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm so glad it passed. I've had so many good memories, you know, despite the political climate and despite, like, all of the, here's why you should or should not sell public lands. Like, how many memories just us together have on public lands? I mean, the time where you said, hey, let's drive 45 miles to this giant piece of public land and get stung by a million mosquitoes. Remember that time when you had that idea?
Yeah. When I had that great idea.
You had that idea? It wasn't me? It was you?
No, it was me. It was completely me. But no, seriously, though, think about it. I mean, because what are your kids going to enjoy if they sell off all the public land? And, you know, here's another thing. You know, I know we've talked about potentially having a realtor on, but think about this. If public lands get sold, and if financially people cannot afford to buy their own land, and the fact that everything else is either rented out or by permission out, you're just going to lose numbers, period. And it's not just from the hunting aspect of things, too, because, like I say, there's so many people that just take the weekend or just take a month or whatever and go camping at these national parks and whatever, because that's the next thing. If they can't afford to keep, or they think that they can sell it, then they're going to make an excuse for a reason why they can't man it. You know, we can't keep this national park open or this national forest open because we just can't afford the people to work there.
Yeah. The thing about it is, I understand budgets are tight for everybody, but like we've been running this for so long.
Right.
But it's always been a part of this. Why all of a sudden? I mean, I shouldn't say all of a sudden, because it hasn't been all of a sudden. People have been trying to sell the public lands ever since we've had public lands. And so I'm just glad that even if, like, the amount of people that united over this, and we have, like, some gigantic names, for example, I know he's a hunter, but, like, Cameron Haynes.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Everybody knows who Cameron Haynes is. He's got, like, a 1.4 million person following on Instagram. He spoke up, which was huge. Like, guys like Joe Rogan, guys like, I mean, there's so many big people that spoke up, and it was like, nobody wants this. Why are you guys trying to sell the public land when literally nobody wants it to be sold? So I don't know.
Yeah. So back to what I was trying to say with the public land stuff, when we were down in Fort Myers Beach there, you know, Hurricane Ian or whatever it was, came in like 3 years ago and destroyed a lot there. Well, there's a public, I don't know what you would call it. It was like a nature preserve type area at the north end of this beach. And it's all caution taped off still to this day. You know, still to this day, the state does not want to spend any money to rebuild it or fix it or make it to where it's visitable, if that's a word, for, you know, for non-residents or residents to come in and walk through and go walk the trails and then sit at the beach. It's just pretty sad that that's where they let it go. And then now, you know, at some point, if they can't afford to fix it, that they'll sell it. And it's just, I think something big like that gets passed, that's what ends up happening. So,
well, I think a lot of that too is developers have had their eye on that beach, I'm guessing, for a long time. And so they're just like, well, if you just say we don't have enough, like, that's the thing. They probably do have the money. I mean, for Christ's sakes, it's Florida. Right. You know, I'm sure there's money, tax dollars in there that can help go to that. Right. Of all of the people that live in these areas who own real estate and land in that area, there's money for it. I'm guessing that someone doesn't want to put the money towards it. So they have the excuse to say, well, it's not being taken care of now. Let's just sell it. Right. It's there. come on. I mean, it's there. The hurricane has just returned it to its natural form. It just needs some TLC to get it back. And so is what it is.
Yep. So anyways, win. Yeah. It was a big win.
Yeah. Big win. Big win for public lands, big wins for hunters and really all American citizens, who just maybe use public lands one day. This son of a gun was like, he was basically saying it's underutilized. I'm like, what are you talking about underutilized?
Yeah.
Because there isn't a house on it and people don't live there 365 days a year doesn't mean that it's not utilized. I mean, let's just talk about some of the forestry grasslands and public or BLM ground that we hunted through cattle leases, through forestry leases, through what other leases would there be? Wind and solar, or drill, like mineral extraction, whatever the case is. I mean, like, that's how the public lands are making money, through leases.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, I'm okay with some of that stuff, but at the same time, like, the natural resource has to come first, whatever that is. And so, you're like, if you go out there and you mow it all down and build a condo, or some rich dude puts up a estate there, well, they've done exactly the opposite of what you're trying to do by having that out there anyway. So it's just another landscape full of houses and windmills. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and see, that's just it too. You know, if this stuff is thought of and brought up, just like it was here, is brought up, maybe it didn't pass this time, but it's not like it can't pass the next time. So that's why nobody should be sleeping on this, because they'll just try to attack it from a different angle or try to use a different avenue with it that, oh, well, we will sell this part off. And then they'll try to sweeten the pot with something else by throwing it in, because, you know, Democrats versus Republicans, we get this one to vote for this and that one to vote for that. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes we don't have a ton of say in it. It worked this time, but that's why I say don't sleep on it.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. What have we talked about? We've talked about getting ready for the season. We've talked about, this public land thing. The next thing that I kind of want to talk about is approach, like the approach, right? Huh? Are you going to go balls to the wall right away in October, you think?
Honestly, probably yes, because we're actually leaving for our Colorado elk hunt August 30th, and we will be there until 6-7. I'll probably be home like September 8th is when I should be home. So I'll still have 3 weeks before the October opener here in Illinois, and I'll have the itch, you know, because I'll feel like there's the high of going on the elk trip, but then there's going to be the come home, and there's going to be the unwind for a week or so. And then, you know, football will be going on then too. So I'll be helping with that, but I'll be itching to get back in the tree stand. And with what I'm seeing in a couple of these spots, I think I might approach some of them differently, you know, use a couple of the different tactics that we've talked about, you know, with, whether it's the thermals or whether it's a creek or whether it's standing corn we just talked about. I try some of the stuff maybe a little bit different and try to maybe shoot something mature at the beginning of October. Or the other one that I was thinking of yesterday when I was in my basement, I need to get that recurve back out, because that is a goal. So maybe that's what I'll start with. So
Yeah. I want to recurve, but I don't want to pay for it. So if you are a recurve manufacturer, send me a recurve bow and I'll use it, and I'll tell people about it. And send one to Jason too. Send another one to Jason. Yeah. Anyway, my goal is to get some stuff set up so that I have a 2 month window of nothing going on the properties. Like, I can't control what others farmers or, you know, what they're doing. But I want this big window in there where I'm not on the farm, because we've talked about this. Any pressure on a farm that you are pressure to, not just everybody else, but you are pressure to, and that goes on public. So what I'm going to say is I would be trying to lay off my properties leading up. And that's why I go on a Western hunt now. And so it's like October 1st through the 8th, I think I'm going to be going on back to South Dakota for another mule deer hunt. Going to a different location than I was last year. Again, like I have Onyx pins all over the place on that state. And so I'm sitting here trying to debate what I want to do. So I got my cherry popped by mule deer last year. And so I'm okay if I shoot, like, I'm not going for anything big. I'm going for another mule deer, or I'm going for a whitetail that I see. And I'm honestly, I don't care. Now that I have a mule deer under my belt, I'm taking the literal first buck, legal buck that probably walks by or that I have an opportunity with. I say that now, but I probably won't. I will probably just be like, I'm going to hold out for something bigger. But anyway, and then what that does is it keeps me out of my whitetail farms for at least a week anyway. And then it's back to coaching football again. And so really, I'm not doing anything until November anyway. I don't have another out-of-state trip planned at the moment. And so that way, once football's over, I can just go head first into deer hunting here in Iowa. And so that's all good, dude. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. So you're talking about football and stuff. And what's crazy is, so last week, my son's baseball team, they lost the second game in the playoffs. And then lo and behold, what do we have start tonight? Football camp, you know, so we have football camp
in July.
Football camp starts
today.
Today's June 30th. Tomorrow's July 1st. Yeah. So starts today. So they have camp this week. And then I think they have a week off and then they start practice.
Yep.
And I'm like, dude, I mean, you don't even get a break as a parent anymore to enjoy a couple weeks with your kids. You know, anyway, so just a little frustration with that because it's like one thing to the next. And then, you know, you can't. So what I noticed on Saturday is how many stands that I forget that I have in certain spots. and so this going on this elk hunt, normally I'm like doing my last minute stand preparation like September 1st, you know, right around Labor Day.
Yep.
And I'm gonna have to change that. I'm gonna have to bump it up. I'm gonna have to do it like middle or third week of August this year. But yeah, I was just thinking on the one property there was four stands and then I get thinking, man, I don't even know if I sat that stand or this stand, you know, and how many do you really need, you know, and especially if you're mobile, you know, what are you doing with them?
But right.
It was just a thought I had.
Yeah, I have. I mean, the more tree stands you have up, kind of the better, right? I mean, I like to keep a couple down for mobile applications, but outside of that, man, like. I'm that guy who's like, if I could, because back in the day, here's how I approached a farm. I'd get out there, I'd take 2 or 3 days, and I would go find every perfect spot. And then that's how I would hunt, right? And then as I had less time, the more mobile I became. And when I say less time, I mean like the more time I decided to not put into prepping it because I had three kids or activities or whatever the case is, right? And so, dude, if I could these days, I'd be out there. And if I live closer to these farms, I'd be out there, you know, getting stuff set up right now. Like I probably already have stuff set up right now, but I'm not gonna, because my kids are old enough where they can, you know, piggyback with me and go out and do some of these things. I just am trying, I'm trying to balance that work life scenario type deal. Deer hunting life scenario, but you know, when you've hunted one of my farms as long as I have, there's a couple of tree stands that are in some really good spots, and so it just becomes kind of a you know where they're at, you know where the deer are going to be moving, you know what wind you need, and so you just have to be patient at that point.
Yeah. I think that's like, so this property I was just talking about, I've talked about it in the past, you know, and there's four tree stands on it right now. And really, for the first 8 or 9 years of hunting that property, I only needed one. I knew exactly what time of year, I knew exactly what wind, and I knew when to go in and approach. Mm-hmm. And then now it's like the more time I've spent there, it's like I'm going to get a little bit greedy and I'm going to see if I can get a little bit closer, or I'm going to see if I can just get a different view, or if I can get the sun out of my eyes, or, you know, there's always a different angle. So yeah, to your point, if I had the time, I would be out there every single day, probably just, oh, what about that branch, or what about this tree, or what about this angle of it, or what about this height? Yep. You know, there's so many different avenues with that.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I'm trying to figure all that stuff out too. One thing that I'm going to highly recommend, if you do have any type of intel from previous years on your farms, and what I mean by that is sightings from a tree stand, or really sightings any time of year, also take a look at previous year's trail camera data.
Uh-huh.
And if you have some time and you're not busy, or it's raining outside and you can't do anything, sit down, flip through these pictures of previous years, what dates you saw the most activity. I do want to send a shout out to a company that I have used in the past. I really haven't used them as much as I have in the past. I have anymore, but I have used it in the past, and it's kind of eye-opening. It's called Deer Lab. And what it does is you can put all of your trail camera pictures in this, and it calculates what time of year. And according to where the trail camera is located, it will tell you what are the hottest times for deer movement in that area based off of the trail camera pictures. For example, you can even break it down by buck, by specific buck. Uh-huh. And they're doing some pretty cool things with AI there now, to where it will identify whether it's a buck or a doe. It might even be able to tell you what buck it is. I haven't messed around with it a lot. But anyway, you put all your trail camera pictures in it, and it will kind of spit out all this information. Like, number one, we have... This particular pinch point where your trail camera in is, there's a ton of deer activity on north winds in the mornings, right? And so you're like, okay, if I have a north wind here, then you got to kind of make your access route. Or if you have another trail camera that's like, there's no activity except for at 1 in the morning. Well, that's good, because that tells you where not to hunt.
Right.
Right. Because of all that stuff. So I am going to tell you all the listeners right now, if you hear noise, I have a sighting crew that has showed up to my house. So any background noise you're going to hear is, like, right now there, I can see a ladder out of this window.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So there's a dude that might be in the background here in a second.
Yeah. There's six other people upstairs right now here. So I can hear footsteps and all the things. And it's like, sometimes you could tell them, you know, hey guys, I got this going on from this time to this time, you know, let's try to keep it down. Yeah. And they forget, you know, it happens. Yeah, so
the older episodes of the Nine Finger Chronicles.
Yeah.
When I was recording in my upstairs, nursery when my kids were babies, you can hear my wife yelling at the kids in the background.
Yep. Yep. And how many times one of the kids would walk in, hey buddy, how's it going, what are we doing?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, hey, I'm recording an episode, bud. I tell you what,
right.
let's play catch later. So
yep.
But yes, past year's history, try to get that calculated out. And that information has helped me tremendously. Maybe not on specific bucks, but it tells me what time of year the rut kind of kicks off, or maybe even in this mid to late October timeframe where the activity starts to come up a little bit more. And I'm telling you, dude, like, it's one of those things where it could help you kill deer, period.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's definitely what, I mean, do the same thing. You know, you were talking about deer sightings and, you know, what you have on camera and everything. If you have a map of your property, it's an excellent idea if you can take and put little X's together, and then you can see where that comes, you know, if they're crossing trails and so on and so forth. I mean, that's two definite ways that you could use this. And you could use the Deer Lab, or you could, I mean, file them. I used to file mine.
File them. Yep.
I used to file them, and then I kind of go through them. And one thing I found, I don't know about you, but what I personally pay attention to probably the most is the doe activity in and around a scrape. Because, I mean, you're going to be able to tell when that doe is ready to go based off of that. So.
Yep. 100%. I'm also, I feel like on this one farm, I need a little bit more stand set up for observation sits.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a specific morning hunt location or a specific location where I can see where they're coming out, and that will tell me where I need to go in. And a lot of that's going to be like in the farm that I want to be the most successful at, where the most mature deer hang out. It's going to be like I need to be in there early in the mornings as they flood back into this timber, because they all leave it and then they all come back into this section, and I can't get in there during the day or during the afternoon hunt because they're all bedded in this area. Mm-hmm. And they can see me come in and all that stuff. So I really have to be smart about that. And it's something that I've identified where I feel like a majority of what I need to have done, it, like as far as how I approach that particular farm, is morning hunts are going to be crucial for me. Afternoon hunts will be kind of setting off, hoping that they come by. But outside of that, man, and what I mean by that is identifying deer movement, identifying what wind direction and what is better for you. And that is it going to be a morning hunt where I need to set off and observe, or is it going to be an afternoon hunt? What wind direction do I need? And all of this stuff comes from experience.
Right. Well, and then there's another thing too. I mean, we talk about the food shift and everything with the deer. We talk about the dominance shift in the deer. And then, you know, for me, there's a camera shift. You know, you start moving your cameras into certain areas and everything. And I think that's where I kind of just right now, I'm dabbling with it a little bit. So on our big piece, that's where I was talking earlier about having this hub scrape, and then this scrape is downwind of this doe bedding area. You know, if you would have asked me years ago, was that a doe bedding area or a buck bedding area? I probably would have told you it was a buck bedding area, just because the only intel I had on it was I had cameras in there in the fall and I would get bucks hitting that scrape. He's pounding that.
Yep. He's pounding my rough right now.
Yeah.
I just beating the shit out of my house with a hammer.
Yep, that's great.
So I think at this point in the podcast, we shut her down. We've been going for 50 minutes now. But you know, huge shout out to our brand new partner, Code Blue Sense. Please go to CodeBlueSense.com and take a look at what they're doing. Also, sit down. Go through all the details you have. Don't be afraid to sit and do your e-scouting, whether that's Google Maps or like Onyx or something like that. Do your scouting, take some opportunity to put some thought into where you're going. Or if you like to fly by the seat of your pants, that's fine too, but go enjoy this time of year, because the best time of year is coming up very quickly. Jason, any final thoughts here?
No, I'm just going to say that, hey, we're going to hit July here tomorrow, so it is going to go fast. So if you haven't gone through your stuff, if you haven't shot your bow, if you need to, you know, purchase anything, you know, now's the time, because it will be here very quickly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Good vibes, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.